today, as most of you know, can you all hear me? Good. As most of you know, we're going to be doing a discernment ceremony. A discernment ceremony concerning entering the priesthood for Steve Palmisano. And you can see behind me, we have, on one side, this side, we have the setup for the video. The other side is the table we're going to use for ceremony. And then the altar is directly behind me. So Steve will be entering a period of discernment about becoming a Soto Zen priest. So it seems appropriate today to talk about discernment and priest training. So in some religions, for example, in Catholicism, if one wants to enter a religious order, it requires several stages of ordination. And this is also true of the Soto Zen path as well. So for example, you may become a postulate. Postulacy means to request to be a candidate for admission to a religious order. At San Francisco Zen Center, where I was ordained and Jaco was ordained, we didn't have a formal period called a postulancy. Or another way to put that would be a pre-ordination stage for discernment. So I would say that I did not enter that stage formally, which is what we're doing with Steve today. Although that didn't happen in a formal way, at San Francisco Zen Center, it is a tradition that's being carried on by colleagues of ours at Dharma Rain in Portland, Great Vow, also in Oregon, and Buddha Eye Temple in Eugene. So Jaco and I have been thinking about this for a long time, and we actually think it's a pretty good idea. So we would like to do this. We're going to be doing this formal stage of discernment with Steve. And as I said earlier, I didn't do this ceremony formally at San Francisco Zen Center, but before I was ordained, I was a resident at San Francisco Zen Center, and I followed the schedule and participated in that container that was created through that training temple for at least a year before I received permission to Sono Keso, which is the very beginning of receiving permission from your teacher that you will become a priest. And what I'm wearing here, this is an okesa. So that's the first step towards priest ordination. I'm sure that my ordination teacher, Reverend Tenshin Anderson, he was paying attention to my practice before and after my ordination. So essentially, the 2 years before my ordination were a kind of postulancy. So in Soto Zen, when we talk about the religious order, we're talking about the lineage of all the priests, all the Buddhas and ancestors, is how we put it, who have come before us and set the precedent of what it means to train for becoming a fully ordained priest. And so we're talking about generations and hundreds of years of people who have come before us and followed this path. So becoming fully ordained has three stages. Shuke Tokudo, which is the first step. Shuke Tokudo is translated as home-leaving ordination. And if you're leaving your family, if you're going into a monastic environment, your young person, say, may in Japan, you might be right out of high school, you would actually be leaving your family and entering a monastic environment. So that's a kind of literal home leaving. But you can also understand this as a period of in which you leave behind your preferences. You leave behind your habits. And you enter a new paradigm. You're letting go of or leaving your small self's sort of comfortable nest of your likes and dislikes. So that would be your home in that way that you're leaving. So this first step is just the beginning, though, and it doesn't mean that a person is a fully ordained priest. It means that you've received the clothing and the orioki, the eating bowls, needed to enter formal training. And it's an acknowledgement and a vow that you want to enter this formal training. You want to fully participate in the training for this vocation. In many ways, this is exactly like becoming an apprentice in a trade. You're learning the craft from the bottom up. So let's say you're an apprentice for a cabinet maker. So for example, you might begin the day before the master craftsmen come. You might spend your time setting out tools. And maybe at the end of the day, you're the last guy in the workshop cleaning up. And so you go home later than anybody else does. So essentially, being this apprentice is actually not very sexy. And it's not where you hope to end up, ultimately, in your craft. But when you enter into this apprenticeship, you willingly give up control of your time. You give up being able to pick and choose the tasks that you want to do. But yet you understand that by doing these things, coming early, staying late, sweeping the floor, picking up all the sawdust, putting away the tools, you understand that over time this teaches you really important things about being a cabinet maker. And as the years go by, you'll go from being apprentice to a journeyman person, and finally you'll be the master carpenter yourself, and you'll be teaching others how to be a carpenter, how to be a cabinet maker. But you can't skip these steps. These steps are important for your understanding. I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and they told me about watching a program on PBS in which the person who apprenticed to the shingle maker for a castle, so the shingles on the roof, they had to apprentice for 7 years to become a master shingle maker. And that every one of the tasks involved in making the castle, if each person did not understand how they were doing their job, fully understand, then ultimately it weakened the foundation of the castle. So from a Zen perspective of our lineage, our particular brand, if you will, of Soto Zen is reliant upon all of us taking up this and doing these stages of apprenticeship so that the foundation of our school is strong and can go forward. So Soto Zen training is an awful lot like this. Your time and tasks at the temple are not your own. You're guided by the master. And so it's a craft that you're learning. Through this process of not picking and choosing, you are observing what's going on around you. You're being present. And many times, unbeknownst to you, you are being transformed. Now, I was ordained when I was 38. And I had basically was, I would say, if we're going to use kind of Christian religious language, I was a novice for 8 years. And 4 of those years I spent at Tassajara Zen Monastery. The next step of ordination is called Shuso Tokudo, which means head monk ordination. So traditionally, the Shuso spends 3 months in residency under the tutelage of a teacher. the Shiso learns about things about becoming a teacher. The Shiso often gives lectures. They advise new students on practice. They talk to their mentor, their priest, who is their teacher for the Shiso time. They look to them for guidance. And one of their primary jobs is to clean the toilet, just to keep them humble, not to get too fat ahead about being Shiso. Jaku and I were both Shiso at Tassajara during a 3-month monastic residency. And then the last ordination is Dharma transmission, or called Shiho. In my case, 10 years went by between the time I was Shiso and Shiho. And Steve, if you're listening to this, don't freak out. I don't think it will take you almost 20 years to do this process. Absolutely not. So, the Shiho ceremony, the ceremony in its entirety to receive Dharma transmission, takes 21 days. 21 days to complete. The last 3 or 4 days of the ceremony are several ceremonies back-to-back that you do in residency with your master. So Jaku and I were disciples, and the Japanese word for that is deshi. We are disciples of our teacher, who is the Honshu, Hakuryu Sojin, who was the abbot of the Berkeley Zen Center. And Sojin Roshi died January 7th of this year. So this final and complete priest ordination confers upon one the ability to ordain others, to give the precepts, among other things, as well as do several esoteric ceremonies, etc. So if we go back to the beginning of this process where I was talking about the beginning of this word postulant. So postulant comes from the Latin word postulans, which derived from the Latin of postulare, which is to ask. So essentially it is an initial request for ordination. So in my case, I had to ask Reverend Anderson 3 times. This is the traditional way, going to your teacher 3 times. And it's not like you get to go one day, next day, next day. It's more like you go, you say, please, I would like to be ordained as a priest, and your teacher says no. And you go away for a while. I don't know, maybe a month or 2 months. And then you go back and you say, I would like to be ordained. And he says no, or she says no. And you know, even though you know that this takes 3 times, you really don't know if the 3rd time the answer is going to be yes. And then finally you go back the 3rd time and the answer is yes. So this process happened over the course of almost a year. So what happens when we are accepted for ordination? We start this process of discernment. We think about our own feelings and our thoughts about what it means to be ordained, and our commitment to this ordination and to the Sangha, if the order, if you will, of the Buddhas and ancestors. And also it may involve the consent of others who are part of this Sangha, who are ordained. So at Ocean Gate Zen Center, that others in that way would be Jaku and I, Daijaku and I. But in other centers, the decision might be include other ordained people at the temple. So this is true at Great Vow in Oregon. And at Great Vow, a person is accepted for this position of postulate for 1 year before being ordained. And once ordained, their training takes 5 years. And I've talked to Steve about this. This is 5 years is also true at San Francisco Zen Center in many places. And so he knows that that's one of the conditions of entering into the possibility of priest ordination. So if we go back a little further here in this talk and say, what is to be discerned? What are we asking this person to discern? So a postulate is exploring with their teacher if this is their life's path, if being a priest is their calling. So the calling of being a priest has nothing at all to do with a person's realization, nor one's commitment to practice Buddhism. Lay people can be realized, and lay people can be totally committed to the practice. So what exactly is it? One of the things is being ordained means that you are carrying the lineage of the Soto Zen school. You are learning and embodying the Soto Zen path. This is expressed through engaging with the practice daily within the container of a temple and demonstrating that you're curious about and you want to learn about the workings of the temple. So again, there are many lay people who demonstrate these qualities as well. The difference here is that one does not get to pick and choose. The postulate during this time of discernment commits themselves to learning their craft. It's like an apprentice and letting go of our own agenda in this matter. So this period of discernment, but also after one is ordained and in training, this is happening. So above all, this time of discernment is working on the koan. Does the life of a Soto Zen priest resonate and reflect my deepest desire to demonstrate and express the Dharma and benefit all beings? It could be that the answer to that is no. It could be that, no, I don't, this is not how I want to express my deep desire to benefit all beings. Maybe I want to go do something else. Or maybe I want to go work for an NGO. So, also at Ocean Gate Zen Center and at most temples, unless you are a lay practitioner who is in resident at a temple, a lay person is not required to follow the totality of our schedule. Sometimes people sleep in, sometimes people have other things to do, sometimes people just don't feel like it. So this can be an aspect of discernment. Essentially, you are discerning if you are in love with or ready to take on the practice as a demonstrable sangha-oriented vocation. Have you been essentially called to the religious life? So through this process of fully participating, watching and listening, you begin to know if this life is what you really want to do. But here's another piece. You're also putting yourself in a discipline to agreeing to and trusting your teacher and this system to form your vocation. So the definition of vocation is an occupation or endeavor that you regard as particularly worthy and requiring of great dedication. It's a kind of summons. It is your life's work, and you feel compelled to place your life in the center of that activity. When I was at Tassajara, as a first-year student, I couldn't leave Tassajara without permission from my teacher. And the first year, my vacation consisted of between the fall and winter practice periods, which is about 10 days going to City Center in San Francisco, and then another short period break before the summer guest season started. So for my first summer that I went, I started out at Tassajara during the summer and then stayed for the practice period. My first summer, I didn't leave Tassajara at all for the 5 months of the guest season. Although more senior people, people who've been there for a while, they were allowed to leave on what we call the day off. A day off in a monastic schedule starts about 6:30 in the morning and it's over about 5:30. So sometimes people would take off and go to Monterey. So on a certain level, your time ceases to be your own. And so you have to ask to leave the container of your training. I think that's, it's about this container that is molding you. This is a basic requirement. Dogen Zenji, who was the founder, 13th century founder of our school in Japan, said, "The practice of Buddhist teaching is always done by receiving the essential instruction of a master, not by following your own ideas. The essential instruction of the practice of Buddhist teaching is always done by receiving the essential instruction of a master, not by following your own ideas. In fact, Buddhist teaching cannot be attained by having ideas or not having ideas." Another way that we say this in Zen is we say, don't make up standards on your own. And Jaku, co-founder and teacher here, Jaku Kinst, Reverend Kinst, wrote in her book called Trust, Realization, and the Self in Soto Zen Practice, she said, "The student's habitual self-clinging is challenged. This self-clinging that we all engage in is challenged." So during our training, we are being challenged and wanting to be challenged. And I'll just say as an addendum, it's not just during our training. I think we're all challenged in this way. But in particular, during our training, we're challenged. This aspect of is disrupting our likes and dislikes. We are agreeing to a period of strict commitment of our time, and that is one such disruptor of this small self. So like it or not, we are present, and we submit to our teacher's guidance. I'm not suggesting here that we do anything that's immoral or that we do things that our teacher should never ask us to do something that's harmful to us. So that's the teacher's responsibility to the student, this grave responsibility. And this guidance of the teacher is also based on their own training and experience in their own ordination and their commitment to the lineage of the Buddhas and ancestors to continue the traditions of Soto Zen. So this guidance is based upon centuries of practitioners who have done the training before us. So discerning whether or not one is able or desires to do such a practice is one of the questions we face during this period of discernment. It could be that at this stage of our life in which we cannot submit or commit ourselves in such a way, that might be how we feel. We realize that we want to spend our time differently, or we are pulled by other pursuits. Or it might be a period in which one needs to resolve some personal matter. So this time of discernment, this ceremony that we're doing today, is to mark this path that Steve is entering. So I ask you to please support him as he negotiates this path. And we don't know what will happen in our lives. Nevertheless, we try to pursue what we love. We try to pursue what is wholesome. I think all of us ask ourselves, what is, as Suzuki Roshi said, our inmost request? What is our heart's request, our deepest desire? In our school, we say it is to benefit all beings. But again, that becomes a koan. How do we benefit all beings? How do we best spend our lives? What does that mean in our lives? What is our deepest desire? What is our inmost request? So, how this manifests in our life, that's a big question. and I welcome Steve's inquiry of this big question. And I look forward to taking this walk with him, no matter what he decides, that we walk together through this path. Thank you very much.